I love this. This is Duke Ellington's Rockin' and Rhythm, and for years I used this as the theme song for my locally produced jazz series because it points to a kind of a perfect balance of elements that came together early in Duke's band. The rhythm is a relaxed, loping New Orleans beat. There's hot solos in New Orleans via Chicago style with influences from King Oliver and Sidney Bechet. Duke's piano playing is very much in the ragtime stride manner that he learned from James P. Johnson. And there's the nucleus, the beginnings of large-scale ensemble jazz that later matured into swing and big band music. Duke used this as a radio theme himself in his early years, but shelved it for decades, and then in the 60s, with an extended piano introduction titled Kinda Dukeish, Duke revived Rockin' and Rhythm as a flag-waving barn burner, as in this London concert of 1964. I'm Dave Radlauer. Welcome to Jazz Rhythm.
Thank you.
Our next selection will be executed in the beginning by our first chair rhythm section. Thank you.
fabulous, live, kind of dukish, his piano introduction to Rockin' in Rhythm, live in London, 1964.
The band in fine form there. Trumpeter Cat Anderson soaring into the stratosphere, and five of his best reed players, Russell Procope, Johnny Hodges, Jimmy Hamilton, Paul Gonsalves, and Harry Carney. What a dynamic outfit.
And I'm Dave Radlauer. This is Jazz Rhythm. Those are my very special guests, Jill Eikenberry and Michael Tucker. They'll be exploring with us the contributions of individual band members to the greater whole of the Duke Ellington Orchestra. And we'll hear about some of the foibles and peculiarities of those Ellington musicians, a bunch of characters they were, with readings from Ellington trumpeter Rex Stewart's memoir, Boy Meets Horn. Here's just one of the many high points of the band, this one around 1940, depicting the sounds, smells, and rhythms of communal life in an apartment block. Duke called it Harlem Airshaft.
A tribute to Duke Ellington. With Dave Radlauer, I'm Jill Eikenberry. Ellington's leadership was more inspiration than guidance, more encouragement than discipline. One musician said that he got the players to do things they might not have done otherwise.
As Clark Terry puts it, Duke taught us who we were.
Ellington was continually inventing, adding new techniques, and rejecting repetition. His personal approach to harmony was the most striking, adding odd pitches within harmonies, creating intentional dissonances through hidden wrong notes, often buried deep in the orchestral fabric.
Duke also frequently chose peculiar voicings of instruments. For example, having Carney play in the baritone saxophone's highest register or writing a part for clarinet in its lowest register. A perfect example is in the early masterpiece Mood Indigo. Duke places the trumpet in middle register, the trombone in higher register, and clarinet in its lowest range.
Tonally, the result was fresh and magical, and his subtle blending of three instruments on one microphone in 1930 became his first big hit.
The famous original recording of Mood Indigo, co-written with clarinetist Barney Bigard. The other soloists were trombonist Sam Nanton and trumpeter Arthel Wetzel. I'm Michael Tucker, and this is Jazz Rhythm, presented by Dave Radlauer. I'm glad you're with us for this loving appreciation of Duke Ellington. Some of the richest elements in Ellington's earlier music come from integrating New Orleans roots into his personal musical vocabulary. Bassist Wellman Breaux was born and raised during the golden era of New Orleans jazz. Johnny Hodges was tutored, for instance, by Sidney Bechet, for whom Ellington had only the highest praise.
Clarinetist Barney Bigard was from a musical New Orleans family and came to the orchestra via the band of King Oliver, adding the unique flavor of the French Creole reed players. Trumpeter Bubber Miley clearly evoked the sounds of King Oliver's muted trumpet trick bag.
Duke called Miley, quote, the epitome of soul and a master of the plunger mute. Those rubber mutes used to create growling voice effects for the trumpet became one of the most characteristic devices of Ellington's brass.
Plunger mute was also perfected for trombone by tricky Sam Nanton,
with his eerie evocation of the human voice in brass. Thank you.
Crucial to the sound of Ellington's early band, Bubber Miley's landmark sound outlasted him.
A perennial crowd pleaser, the plunger mute remained a distinctive signature sound of the Ellington brass.
You're listening to Jazz Rhythm, the best in hot jazz, old and new. I'm Jill Eikenberry.
Thank you, Jill and Michael. They'll rejoin us later in the program. I'm Dave Radlauer. This is a Jazz Rhythm tribute to Duke Ellington, celebrating 100 years since the birth of this great musician, innovator, raconteur, and devotee of the arts of food, love, life, and jazz. That was Dear Old Southland from 1933, I think very good evidence of New Orleans influences on Ellington's music, and Wellman Bro's strong New Orleans-style string bass leading the rhythm section. We've also heard the classics Mood Indigo and Black and Tan Fantasy, early Ellington masterworks from the late 20s. Very good examples of the way Ellington wrote and arranged to make best use of the individual strengths and distinctive voices of his band soloists. String bassist Wellman Bro was not a soloist, but nonetheless, he was a strong voice and influence within the band. A New Orleans native from the golden age of New Orleans jazz in the 1910s, Bro, after 7 years with the Duke, significantly went on to work many years with other New Orleans greats. Greats like Sidney Bechet, Jelly Roll Morton, Bunk Johnson, and Kid Ory. Good examples of Wellman Bro's big, powerful sound and driving swing in the Ellington band are Old Man Blues and his own composition, Double Check Stomp, from 1930. Thank you. Bassist Wellman Bros' own Double Check Stomp, 1930.